Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Worst to Best from the Mennonites Podcast. I hope you all are having a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And in case you didn't already know from the title, the thumbnail, and from the song I just played, this edition of Worst to Best is about the X-Men movies. And yes, that includes the Deadpool films as well, and the Wolverine trilogy as well. And I have all my little notes, well, not really notes, but just the list that I have for the movies ranking right here, and I've been wanting to do this one for a while. And funny enough, the day that I'm uploading this, which is July 14th, it is exactly 20 years from the premiere of the first X-Men movie in 2000. So, pretty cool that I've decided to do that one today. I believe I intentionally planned it that way, but who knows? I'm not that clever. Although, I did plan the Star Wars one on May the 4th, because that was the most obvious. And then the Superman one that I did, I had it on the anniversary of the first comic book of Superman. So that's pretty cool. But yes, let me get right to it, because the X-Men movies, I have kind of a love-hate relationship for the most part. I mean, I do love most of the movies, and even the movies that I don't like that much have some elements about them that I can enjoy, which I will get into more detail as I go along my list. I didn't get to see all of them in theaters. The only ones that I did get to see in theaters was the very first X-Men movie that I went to see with my brother Javi and family friend Christina. I didn't see X-Men 2, even though I really wanted to. I did not see X-Men 3. I did see Wolverine Origins Wolverine, and I saw Logan, and then Deadpool 2, and then Dark Phoenix. And I will get to those films as I go through my list. I wish I would have been able to see certain films because of how I personally feel about them. But at the same time, like, you know what? I have my Blu-ray movies. I don't have a lot of them. For the X-Men movies, I only have Logan, Days of Future Past, and Apocalypse. And Apocalypse was a Christmas gift. Yeah. I would like to own the full Blu-ray collection of all the X-Men movies, because I am a completist and I have to have the full collection of these kind of movies. But yeah, without further ado, let's get right to the list. Kicking things off, at the bottom, number 12, we have X-Men Apocalypse, released in 2016, I believe. And this one picks up from, 10 years after Days of Future Past, and directed by Bryan Singer, who was the one that kicked off the X-Men franchise with X-Men and then X-Men 2. And then disappeared for a little while, and then came back with Days of Future Past and Apocalypse. Now, the reason it is on my list, because it's just at the bottom of the list, it's because it had a lot of potential, because the Age of Apocalypse storyline from the comics and then from the cartoon as well. I'm such a big fan of that story, and Apocalypse is one of my favorite X-Men villains, and Oscar Isaac plays him in this movie, and I love Oscar Isaac. I loved him as Poe Dameron in the Star Wars sequel trilogy. I loved him as Blue in Sucker Punch. But it's just with this, you can tell he was giving the performance of his life trying to be Apocalypse. Especially because, like, all the interviews that I would see, like, you feel like he really wanted to give the best performance possible. Now, he was in this. He was in it. He was a fan of the character, at least. Maybe from the cartoons, I'm not 100% sure. So I remember there was, like, the little compilation video from one of the press junket interviews where they all started humming the X-Men theme that I was playing a little while ago. And yeah, it's just such a great actor, wasted as this character. And it's unfortunate, because a lot of great actors were in this movie. A lot of actors that I'm a fan of. Ty Sheridan, Sophie Turner, Jennifer Lawrence I'm a big fan of, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender. Although I will say, with the X-Men series that started from First Class, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, and Dark Phoenix, the best parts of those four movies were Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy. Especially Michael Fassbender as Magneto. Because he's another one that I'm a big fan of. I mean, he was in 300, which was one of his first big movies. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that. So, and he's been in a lot of other movies that I love. I mean, Inglourious Basterds, he was the Steve Jobs movie that I'm surprised he didn't get more award recognition for, because he was phenomenal in that film as well. And I'm hopeful that, we get to see more big budget, you know, roles for him because he deserves it. Maybe he'll pop up in the DCEU, maybe he'll pop up in the MCU, who knows. But yeah, he is my favorite thing about those X-Men. They call it the X-Men prequel trilogy. I don't call it that. I just say I call it the First Class series, because First Class was the one that launched that series of films. And he is my favorite thing about all of them. So, and here he's my favorite part of this one as well. He's his story where, after the events of Days of Future Past, that he gets married and has a kid, and he's living a nice life somewhere else, and you know, trying to pretend that who he was before as Magneto, you know, he's trying to bury that life. He doesn't want to be that anymore. You know, until one day where his powers are exposed when trying to save a co-worker at the factory that he's working at. And that turns into a whole shitstorm where that costs him his wife and his daughter, and then he just snaps and kills all of them. Which, you know, such an emotional... It is an emotional scene in an otherwise shit film, in my opinion. And Sophie Turner as a young Jean Grey. I mean, I love her. I feel like she was very underutilized as well in this, which is a shame because she should be a perfect Jean Grey, but just, I don't know, her skills were wasted in this film, in my opinion at least. And then Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, you know, playing her for four movies, which is one movie more than Rebecca Romijn playing her in the other films. And Ty Sheridan as Cyclops was great. Evan Peters as Quicksilver, you know, always great to see him. He's another one that I've been a fan of for a long time. He was in from the American Horror Story, pretty much every season of American Horror Story. The first Kick-Ass movie, I loved him in that as well. Trying to think of other stuff that he's done off the top of my head. I don't know. I know he has done a lot of stuff. But off the top of my head, I can only think of Kick-Ass and American Horror Story. But he's great on those, so, you know, cool to see him. And everybody loves him as Quicksilver, so you can't go wrong with his performance. I will also say this. My favorite part about this movie, besides the emotional thing with Magneto, is when it's towards the end of the movie that we get to see Logan as Weapon X. And it's just... That was a very cool moment, too, that from my understanding, they kind of threw that in last minute. I'm not 100% sure, though. I could be wrong. But I remember hearing something about that being a last-minute addition to the movie. Yeah, and we got to see Hugh Jackman and Wolverine, Logan, in the Weapon X helmet, which was just cool to see that in live action. And, yeah, I don't really have much else. I did like that they had the Metallica Four Horsemen song in this when they had the Angel character, Archangel, when he was, you know, in his little whatever the fuck, you know, mood, getting drunk because one of his wings got damaged, but then Apocalypse saves him and gives him the metal wings. And Olivia Munn as Psylocke, she definitely looked the part. Her performance was eh, but she at least looked the part. I can give them that much. But just, yeah, other than that, this... So many great actors playing these great characters. Such a wasted film. And then at the end of the movie, they have the comic-accurate costumes, or at least accurate to the 90s cartoon of X-Men, and it looked great. I was excited, like, alright, this is awesome, we're gonna get to see those costumes in live action. And then we come over to the next film, which is number 11 on my list, Dark Phoenix. I know most people would have that on the bottom of their list, but it's number 11 on my list because I actually somewhat enjoyed it more than Apocalypse, but it's still not a great movie. I mean, you can check out my full review that I did last year for Dark Phoenix, where I went into a little more detail about that. But it's just, yeah, they went from ending Apocalypse with the accurate costumes that people always say, oh, we need comic accuracy. And then in the next film, they're wearing, which is still technically comic accurate, but just going from the comic accurate individual costumes for Storm, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Mystique, Beast, which I forgot Nicholas Holt as Beast was part of those movies too, and then just wearing matching, you know, jackets with a yellow X. It's just, I don't know. You know, this one was directed by Simon Kinberg, who wrote Apocalypse and Days of Future Past, and I believe he also wrote Last Stand and First Class. I don't remember. And then the third act of this one, because I don't want to completely repeat everything I said in my spoiler review from last year, but the third act was a product of one of the reshoots. After the initial test screenings that they did in late 2017, early 2018, where they had the big sequence on the train, which was an awesome sequence, but that was a last minute thing, which shows that, you know, sometimes reshoots are not as bad. I mean, of course, Justice League situation, y'all know how I felt about that, and I've covered that plenty of times on here already, but yeah, the reshot sequence of the train was the best part of the whole thing. And of course, also Michael Fassbender as Magneto was also the best part. You know, I guess you could say I'm a fanboy for Michael Fassbender, and I hope I really want to see him used more in movies like this. I know he's so much more than just comic book movies, you know. And I try my best to expand my mind past that stuff, but I don't know. Mystique, Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique, she finally dies in this movie, and the makeup job she had in this one was the worst of all of the previous three films, because she just had enough of it. She didn't want to do the blue shit on her face anymore, and you can tell that her performance is so phoned in, it's not even funny. The only other saving grace about Dark Phoenix, besides the performance of Michael Fassbender and the third act on the train, the score by Hans Zimmer. That score by Hans Zimmer is one of the best scores I've ever heard, and one of the best that I've heard from Hans Zimmer specifically. And you already know I'm a big fan of Hans Zimmer. His scores for all the Nolan movies, for the Lion King, both versions of it, for Zack Snyder and Gladiator. He did music for some of the Call of Duty games. He is one of my favorite composers. And the score that he did for Dark Phoenix is truly one of the best I've ever listened to. I think my favorite score from him is the score that he did for Inception. But I would put his Dark Phoenix score right up there. You know, that's just my opinion, though. And another thing also with Dark Phoenix, that originally it was supposed to be a two-part film, like a two-part story, based on a lot of stuff I've heard, where the original cut of Dark Phoenix was like 3 hours long, maybe a little bit longer, and they were going to split that into two movies. And I wish they would have done that, because it would have been a much more fleshed out story, and probably wouldn't have gotten as much hate as it did. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters. I might have to get the Blu-ray for it to see if I feel any differently. And also because, like I said, I'm a completist. I need to have the whole X-Men collection. Yeah, I already have. I have all the Spider-Man movies. I have the Raimi and the Mark Webb and Into the Spider-Verse and the MCU Spider-Man movies, and I have all the Batman movies and all the Superman movies and all the Star Wars. You know, I'm a completionist. I need to have the whole series. I have all the Harry Potter films as well, so I need to get the other X-Men movies on Blu-ray so I can complete my collection. Moving on to the next item on my list, number 10, that is The Wolverine. From, I believe, 2011, and this one was directed by James Mangold, who would go on to direct Logan. And this one, it's not a terrible film out of the entire Wolverine trilogy. It's just the first two acts as what I enjoyed more from this movie. The third act is when it becomes, you know, as the other critics would like to say, a CGI mess, and it really was. I mean, because it is a very comic accurate story, for Wolverine, for Logan, but just, that third act was just so eh. And plus, it's been a while since I've watched it, if I'm being honest. It's honestly been a while since I've seen a lot of the X-Men movies. But the Wolverine was one of the ones that I've seen. I did see most recently. It's just a lot of it I did forget. And I know that this does take place so many years after the events of X-Men 3. And Wolverine is, like, having, like, PTSD, you know, flashbacks because of what happened with Jean Grey in that movie. And it's really fucking with his head all throughout. And, you know, and of course, you know, Hugh Jackman, his performance as Wolverine, it's always great. He was a great Wolverine. And, you know, it is going to be hard to replace him. Although, personally, I think Karl Urban would be a great Wolverine whenever they do finally bring him to the MCU, but that's just me. And most people, they fan cast Tom Hardy, but he's already Venom, so that ain't gonna happen. So my pick for a fan cast in the MCU for Wolverine is Karl Urban, and I know a few people that agree with me. But going back to Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, and I know the other thing that one thing that I remember a lot of people complain about is that one of the I think it's a deleted scene when he gets the briefcase from the guy and it has the comic book Wolverine costume and you know he never wears it. That's one of the gripes that I remember a lot of people saying that he never wore the comic accurate costume in any of these movies. And yeah, I get it. That can be a big gripe for a lot of people. A lot of fans of the comic books want to see those comic book costumes in live action, but not all of those costumes really translate well in live action. Like imagine the Falcon, the costume that he had in his original costume in the comics. Imagine that in live action. It would look cheesy as fuck and it would look stupid as fuck. You know, seriously, can you picture Anthony Mackie wearing that little pajama onesie and the little wings attached on the sleeves? Come on. So just, yeah, like, comic accuracy, you know, that's what I'm just gonna say right now. To me, comic accuracy doesn't mean shit to me, only as long as I get a good story. I couldn't care less if it's comic accurate. I just want a good story. If it's a good story, comic accuracy means shit to me. That's how I feel. Yeah, but I know there's a lot. There's the comic book purists out there that want everything to be 100% comic accurate, and they won't have it any other way. And they love to shit on DC specifically about that. But they conveniently give the MCU a lot of pass and leeway for their non-comic accurate stuff. Which, trust me, it's a lot of it. 23 movies in, and there's a lot of shit that is not comic accurate. But the one thing I will say, though, besides, like I said, the first two acts that I really loved, I like the post-credit scene when Wolverine is in the airport and he runs into Magneto and Professor Xavier, which, of course, this all sets up the events for Days of Future Past. And, you know, I will get to that in a few minutes because, well, not because of it, but yet, moving on to number 9 on my list, we have X-Men Origins Wolverine. And I did, like I said, I saw this one in the theaters back in 2009, and I did have a lot of fun when I saw it in theaters. I thought it was a good movie at the time. You know, just like, again, and when I saw Justice League in 2017, at the time, I thought it was a good movie. And I said that I enjoyed it. But upon rewatch, and all the shit that I learned about what happened with Justice League, I do not feel that way anymore. And like I said, I can't wait to get rid of my Blu-ray of that monstrosity when Zack Snyder's Justice League finally comes out. If I'm a little out of it right now, I am sorry. It's almost 2 in the morning that I'm recording this, so fuck it. And I usually record this late anyway, so I don't even know why I'm explaining it to you. But yeah, X-Men Origins Wolverine from 2009, which is just kind of funny that as Hugh Jackman got older and older, he's when he started to appear in the movies that are taking place before that first X-Men movie, which is just funny because this one, yeah, again, it's supposed to be his origin story before the events of the original X-Men trilogy. And he's, of course, visibly older. He's 10 years older than what he actually was in the first movie, but he's supposed to be younger, and I just think that's hilarious. But, I don't know. But there was a good cast in this movie. I mean, we had Ryan Reynolds as Wade Wilson, and, you know, we all remember how he felt about the way they portrayed Deadpool in this one, because he was the Deadpool. And Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth was really cool. I enjoyed Liev Schreiber. I think he's a very good actor, a very underrated actor as well. And he was awesome as Kingpin in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And, of course, I loved him in the Scream trilogy. But he was very good as Sabretooth, you know, in this one. And we had Dominic Moynihan in this one as well. And that was pretty cool. We had Will.i.am was there as well. We had Taylor Kitsch as Gambit. I was excited for that because I have always been a fan of the Gambit character, and I was hoping he would have been in the X-Men trilogy previously. And I did remember that there was a rumor he was going to be in X-Men The Last Stand, but then, of course, that never materialized. But I was excited that we were going to get to see Gambit in live action because he was always one of my favorites from the cartoon, especially. I like Taylor Kitsch as Gambit, you know, Remy LeBeau as his real name, and I thought he gave a good performance. I mean, it could have been better, you know, if it was in a better film, then it would have been great. I don't really have much else to say about it. I mean, I did enjoy the opening montage where they showed Logan and Victor Creed, that's Sabretooth's real name, their montage of them fighting in the different wars, you know, over the centuries, up until whatever is the present day part of the story. That part was pretty cool. I don't really have much else to say about that one. So, moving on. To number 8 on my list, it is X-Men The Last Stand, the third film in the original X-Men trilogy. This one was directed by Brett Ratner, because Bryan Singer had to step away from it because he was busy filming Superman Returns. And you want to hear my thoughts on that film? Check out my Worst to Best for the Superman movies that I uploaded back in April. Now, this one, I think it was actually, this one is the shortest of all the X-Men movies, because this one was like about an hour and a half, 45. So it was a relatively short film, but it doesn't feel like that when you're watching it. And this is the film where we get to see the Phoenix for the very first time. Remember that? Jessica Chastain in Dark Phoenix? No. But yeah. In this one, we get to see the Phoenix for the first time, and again, I feel right here, like, the Phoenix story was so wasted in this one. It was wasted in Dark Phoenix, and it was wasted in The Last Stand, because the Phoenix saga is one of my favorite stories from the comics and from the cartoon, because there's the Phoenix saga, and then there's the Dark Phoenix saga, and it is my favorite X-Men story, and I just, it just sucks that they fucked it up twice. They fucked up the Phoenix story twice. And especially the way they left off in X-Men 2, leading into this one with the Phoenix, and they just fucked it up completely. I don't know how they could do that. Especially because, again, Simon Kinberg wrote The Last Stand and Dark Phoenix. So he had two chances to give us a great Phoenix story. And, you know, we got what we got, so. But in this one, we got to see Vinnie Jones as Juggernaut, and he was fun as Juggernaut. I mean, he wasn't a great Juggernaut, but he was definitely entertaining in the role. I'm trying to think of who else we got in this one. You know, because they did introduce Kelsey Grammer as Beast. Kelsey Grammer as Beast was perfect. That is perfect. That's a great example of perfect casting as well. And, you know, because Kelsey Grammer, the way fans like of the X-Men, like myself, know the character of Beast, and the way the acting style of Kelsey Grammer fit perfectly well with Hank McCoy, you know, Beast. And whoever it was that made the decision to have him as Beast, you know, I hope they got a good bonus because that was perfect casting. And that is one of the things that a lot of people say was their favorite parts of it. And we also were introduced to Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde in this movie as well. So that was pretty cool. And I am an Ellen Page fan, so I was happy to see her here. And then, you know, of course, she became a superstar with Juno a year later. And that's a great film. And I'm surprised she did not win an Oscar for that. She definitely deserved it. But the whole story about this one is that it was, again, originally they were supposed to be about the Phoenix, as they hinted at in the previous film. But then this one instead became about finding the mutant cure. And, I mean, they could have still done that kind of story, but that should have been its own film. They shouldn't have shoehorned that with the Dark Phoenix story, because the Phoenix deserved its own story, and the mutant cure should have been its own separate thing, because both of them are equally intriguing stories that deserve much more time to be fleshed out, so that the audience can actually give a shit about what they're telling us and what they're showing us. And it's, I don't know, it's just, yeah, you see what I mean when I said I have a love-hate relationship with the X-Men movies. You know, because there's things that I love about them, and then there's a lot of things that I hate about them. But at the same time, this is another movie that I haven't seen in a very long time. You know, because I did used to have them all on DVD, but I had to sell them for financial reasons that I was going through at the time. Again, not so much having those problems anymore. So eventually I'll get those. But yeah, I don't really have much else to say about The Last Stand either. Now, but moving on to the next one on my list, number 7, X-Men First Class, the one that kicked off the new series of X-Men films after the failure of Last Stand. Not that it really failed, but you know. And this one was where we were introduced to Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, James McAvoy as Charles Xavier, Michael Fassbender as Magneto, Nicholas Hoult as Hank McCoy, Beast, and we also got to see Kevin Bacon in this movie. You know, nothing. Always happy to see Kevin Bacon. He's a fine actor that can do no wrong, in my opinion. And I'm trying to think of who else was in this movie that I can't think of off the top of my head. Shit. Zoe Kravitz was in this one as well, so that was a lot of fun. And she's going to be Catwoman in the Matt Reeves Batman films. Looking forward to that. And I think she was also in the Divergent film, which I've only seen the first one. Have not seen the other two. Apparently the second and third movie were just complete shit, and that's why they never finished the series. Because they were supposed to have a fourth film, but when they said, oh, we're going to put it as a TV movie, the cast was like, no, fuck that. I signed on for a movie, not a TV show. So they all dumped out. Which is a shame, because it was a series that had a lot of potential. It just, after the first film, they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. The fuck's going on here? Just Twitter notifications and Vero notifications. I'll ignore that for now. I'll check them out when I'm done doing this. But with First Class, you know, it takes place in the 60s, so of course they had to have a lot of 60s stuff in there. And, you know, like the bell bottoms and the hairstyles and the clothing and like the big collars and shit like that. One thing that I actually do remember that I really loved was when they have the montage of Charles and Magneto recruiting people for the X-Men, and they find Logan in a bar somewhere. He's just you know, sitting there minding his own business, smoking a cigar, and then they just call us like I'm Charles Xavier, I'm Larry Clincher, and he just responds with, go fuck yourselves. That's my favorite part of the entire movie. I mean, it's a great movie. X-Men First Class is a great movie. You know, Matthew Vaughn. Wish I could have seen more of what he had in store for the X-Men movies before Bryan Singer decided to make his return for those two films. So, But hey, First Class was a great story. That's another one that, again, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I just remember that I loved it very much. And we got to see Magneto getting the helmet for the very first time, which was a completely different helmet than he wore in any of the later films. But still, it looked cool. And like I said, Michael Fassbender as Magneto is the best part of those last four X-Men movies. And so, when I finally get to own all the X-Men movies, I'll be happy to enjoy all of them, one after the other, even the shit ones. So, yes. And Rose Byrne. We also had her. She was in Apocalypse as well for a little bit. And Rose Byrne as Moira, introduced in First Class. And she's another one that I just find absolutely lovely, and I'm always happy to see her on screen. And because Moira is, you know, essentially the love of Charles Xavier's life. So that plays a little bit of a factor in these stories, and that's always fun. Yeah, don't really have much else to say about that one either. So I'm sorry that if this is gonna be a very shit video for you guys. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm trying my best, and like I said, it's 2 a.m. and I'm tired as shit right now, and I'm already 30 plus minutes into this, and I feel like I'm just fucking it up completely. But anyways, move on to number 6 on my list. We have Deadpool 2. Yes, like I said, I was going to include the Deadpool movies on this list. And Deadpool 2, I did get to see this in theaters in 2018. And I remember my first reaction to it when I came out of the theater. I tweeted out that I haven't laughed that hard in such a long time, to the point where my face hurts and my stomach hurts. And it's true, I really felt that way when I saw it in 2018. I laughed my ass off so much that my face hurt from laughing. I was in tears for a lot of it, and my stomach hurt from laughing so hard. And I don't know, like, Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool is probably the most perfect casting for any comic book movie ever. You know? And although I do agree with a lot of people that Deadpool 2 wasn't quite as good as the first film, I can't agree with that. I still think it's a great movie. And I know Fatal J, he's probably not watching this, but I know he hates Deadpool 2, partially because he hates Ryan Reynolds. He loves the first Deadpool, but he hates Ryan Reynolds. Go figure. But this one, we get to see Josh Brolin as Cable. And that was a pretty cool casting as well, because, you know, I don't know, Josh Brolin, he to me, he's the kind of actor that can play almost any character, any role. And of course, everybody knows him best as Thanos, and he was great as Thanos, but I also thought he was great as Cable as well. And he's another one of those actors that to me, he's great in everything I've ever seen him in. Although Jonah Hex was not that great, he was the best part of it. You know, because you could tell he tried really hard. And, you know, but, you know, of course, I loved him in Goonies. Loved him. Loved him in the No Country for Old Men. And, of course, loved him as Thanos. And Old Boy was a good one, too. Yeah. And, shit, there's another one that I remember. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a movie that he did where I think it's him and I think Kate Winslet. And Tobey Maguire plays the adult version of the little boy during the movie. I don't know. I'm fucking it up completely. Either way, you know, the whole story of it is that Cable travels back through time, which that's literally all Cable does in every story he's ever been part of. He's just traveling through time. That he's going back in time to kill this mutant named Julian. No, not Julian. No, that's the name of the actor, right? Shit. I gotta look it up now. This is one that I actually do have to look up, because my mind is Yeah, I think it's the name of the actor. It's Julian Dennison. Let me see. Alright. Yeah, Julian Firefist. That's the name of the character. But he had a different name in the. He had another name in the movie besides Firefist. I forgot what it was though. Anyways, but yeah, we also had the return of Morena Baccarin. Is that how it's pronounced? I don't know. As Vanessa, the love of Wade's life, who she gets killed in the beginning of this movie, which was fucked up. And as Zazie Betts as Domino, who of course a lot of us also remember from the Joker movie, and that's just she was wonderful in that as well. And you know she's just so wonderful to. You know, look at and just. Whew. Anyways, yeah, we had also Bjorn Hildebrand returning as Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and the dude that plays Colossus, I don't know his name. And I'm looking at the cast list right now. T.J. Miller as Weasel. Okay, and Yukio, she was lovely. She was pretty fun. And Black Tom, played by Jack Kesey, I don't know. Which is just, that was funny that when he introduces himself to Wade when they're at the mutant, and the Icebox Mutant Center, whatever thing, that he's like, I'm Black Tom Cassidy, and then he's like, and then Deadpool's just, I'm White Wade Wilson. And then when Cable is chasing all of them, you know, trying to get to Firefist. And I'm trying to remember what his real name was. Shit. Let me see if Wikipedia has it, because I'm looking at IMDb. Let me see if Wikipedia has it. I know Wikipedia is not a trusted source, but they might might be more trusted for that part now. So Russell. Shit, that's the name of the kid. Russell. Yeah. When they're chasing him on the little train thing, and Cable gun goes off and he shoots the kid, and Deadpool's like, oh, you killed Black Tom, you racist son of a bitch. I think that's the part that I laughed the hardest when I was watching it, and I still laugh so hard when I'm watching it and whenever I watch it now. And I just, my god, that's just so fucking funny. And also, we get a more comic-accurate version of the Juggernaut in this movie as well. I don't know who did the motion capture for him, but Ryan Reynolds did the voice of Juggernaut, which was pretty funny, because then even the music that they play when Juggernaut is on, and then when he has a fight with Colossus later, that it's like a choir music going, holy shitballs. Holy shitballs. I love that. It's just fucking funny to me. Because with the Deadpool character, they're able to be ridiculously absurd with that kind of thing. So, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's what Deadpool allows them to be as ridiculous as possible. And you know, at the end of the movie, because after Vanessa dies, Deadpool is trying to kill himself throughout the whole movie. And then when he finally gets the chance to kill himself at the end of the movie, you know, we get a scene that's actually pretty emotional, where he's reunited with Vanessa in, I guess, the afterlife. And, you know, I actually get a little teary-eyed for that part. You know, but, you know, she pushes him back because she says, like, it's not your time, and blah, 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 blah. And then... we get the post-credit scenes where Deadpool hijacks the time device that Cable has and travels back through time to alter these different events. Like, he travels back to save Vanessa at the beginning of the movie and then travels back to the X-Force montage with, you know, with Vanisher and Zeitgeist and all of them, Pete, I think is the name, Peter, that he goes to save him from hurting himself, and then he travels to X-Men Origins Wolverine, and he murders the version of Deadpool in that movie, and then goes back to shoot Ryan Reynolds when he's after reading the script for Green Lantern. And then in the supercut version, I don't think they have it in the regular. I don't remember if they had it in the regular theatrical cut, but at least in the supercut, that version that I've seen, the super duper director's cut, he goes back, because, you know, the whole thing of, you know, if you travel back in time, would you kill baby Hitler? He travels back in time to baby Hitler, and he can't bring himself to do it because baby Hitler is so damn cute. Oh, it's just funny. And also the whole inside joke that he keeps calling Cable racist, which is just funny. Yeah, I love Deadpool 2. I know not a lot of people love Deadpool 2 as much as the first one. And like I said, first one is better, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But I still love Deadpool 2. And I really hope that Disney will get off their asses and make Deadpool 3 and make it a rated R Deadpool 3. Because you can do Deadpool in a PG-13 depending on the context. In which it's that PG-13. You know, but to have it the way that the fans love him from the first two films, it has to be rated R. And I know they can't release it through MCU, you know, for them. They can't have it as Marvel Studios Deadpool. They can do it through 21st Century Studios. Because, you know, Disney has this whole thing about maintaining the image of Disney. Whatever. But, yeah, moving on to number 5 on my list, we have the very first X-Men movie, which, like I said, came out exactly 20 years ago today, July 14th, 2000. And this one, I've been hearing about it through like the early stages of the internet at the time. Yeah, of course, because the internet was not as insane as it is now. But at the time, you know, there were like some sites and some magazines talking about the development of the X-Men movie, and I'd been hearing about, you know, we're going to get an X-Men movie, and when I found out that when it was finally coming out, I don't think I saw any trailers for it at all that I can remember now. Yeah, but then I went to go see it, you know, like I said, it was me, my brother Javi, a family friend Christina, and all three of us went there, and it was at the old United Artists on Crossway Boulevard. I believe that's what it was. You know, because I remember that theater shut down. It became a Modell's later on. I don't know if it's still open though. I think it closed. Anyways, and I remember that because we all grew up with the cartoons, and so we were, you know, anxious to see how these characters that we grew up watching in the cartoons and reading in the comic books, we were going to see them in live action. And we are introduced to Anna Paquin as Rogue, Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier, Ian McKellen as Magneto, Rebecca Romijn as Mystique, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, I think I already said that, James Marsden as Cyclops, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, I love her, Halle Berry as Storm, what's his face as Iceman? I can't remember what his real name is. Shit. Whatever. Tyler Mayne as Sabretooth, who gave a much better performance as Michael Myers in the Rob Zombie Halloween films. Ray Park as Toad, best known as Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace and the, spoiler alert, surprise appearance that he had in the Solo movie. So, yeah, and it's essentially an origin story of not necessarily of how the X-Men came to be, but it's an origin story of Rogue and Wolverine discovering essentially who he is and joining the X-Men. And I remember because what's-his-name that plays the villain in Mission Impossible 2, he was the original actor cast to play Wolverine. And because of scheduling conflicts, he couldn't do that, so then that's when they got Hugh Jackman. And I just wonder, if they had kept the original actor for Wolverine, how much of a difference those movies would be. How big, how different they would be. The movies would not be the same That's for sure. But how much different would they be if that original actor played him? I don't know. But at the same time, a lot of fans like myself, I know not all of them, but a lot of fans like myself, are so grateful that we did get Hugh Jackman, because Hugh Jackman is such a great actor, and you know, and he is proud that his career is attached to the X-Men films and playing Wolverine. He is proud of that so much. Yeah, and I have so much love and respect for that, because a lot of actors, when they play some of these comic book characters, they get embarrassed about it after a while. But thankfully, actors like Patrick Stewart, like Ian McKellen, and Hugh Jackman, they are not embarrassed by it at all. They are proud, they own it, and they love it, and I love them for that. But yeah, the story of this one, that, you know, Rogue discovering that she's a mutant, having these powers, and where she almost kills her boyfriend, and then she's on the run, bumps into Wolverine up in Canada, and she's trying to figure out what the fuck to do with her life. You know, she sneaks onto his truck, and then he decides to let her tag along. They get ambushed by Sabretooth, and then they're rescued by Storm and Cyclops, and you know, shenanigans ensue from there, and you know, they touch on the Holocaust survivor story for Magneto, and we get Rebecca Romijn again as Mystique, and she's just absolutely wonderful as well, and you know, the nice little sequence in the X-Men mansion where we get to see him Xavier using Cerebro, and fucking hell. I guess I think I'm gonna have to try to rush through these a little quicker, because I had almost an hour. I see 47 plus minutes now, and I'm just getting so sleepy. Nothing's gonna keep me awake right now. I don't have any energy drinks. I just got this can of Sprite, so. Yeah, not really doing a good job of keeping me awake with that. So, but the way that movie ends, they do a good job of setting up for the sequels without outright saying we're gonna have a sequel. So that was pretty cool. And then we move on to number 4 on my list, which is the very first Deadpool movie from 2016, which director David Ayer credits. Or maybe blames the success of that film, and also the critical response of Batman v Superman, for how the Suicide Squad movie ended up being for him. Which, I mean, that sucks, but it is what it is. You can't help it. But yes, this one is the introduction to Ryan Reynolds as the proper version of Deadpool, and this is where we get the Morena introduced as the love of his life, Vanessa, and T.J. Miller as Weasel, and the character Dopinder that I forgot to mention in the last one. We are introduced to him in this movie, and apparently the name Dopinder came from someone that Ryan Reynolds went to school with that apparently passed away, so that's pretty cool. And and we have what's his name? As Francis or Ajax, I think Francis is supposed to be his real name, and Gina Carano in this movie as well. I absolutely love her, and I would love to see her as She-Hulk in the MCU. We'll see how that goes, because they have the show that's supposed to be coming to Disney Plus. But yeah, we have him. I can't remember his name, shit. But he's one of the villains in Alita Battle Angel. If anyone watching this, you know who I'm talking about. I just can't remember his name. That he plays Francis. His mutant ability is that he feels no pain, which is just a very unique mutation to have. I wonder how I would be with that kind of power, where I don't feel anything. You know, physically, at least. You know, that's, yeah. And honestly, I don't really know what I could say about the first Deadpool movie that that hasn't already been said by other people. I will say, though, the sex montage was something I was not expecting at all, especially when they get to the part of it, the International Women's Day, where she's giving it to him, which, again, was very unexpected. But at the same time, you know, she's just so fucking hot, I didn't care. Well, not say that I didn't care, I didn't mind it as much, because, again, she's just so fucking hot. God damn. Anyways, one of the other things that I do love about this one is that it was a lot more grounded than the second film, because the second film, after the success of this one, the second film, the guy had a much bigger budget, so they went balls to the wall crazy with that one. But this one, you could tell that this was such a passion project for Ryan Reynolds, especially that he wanted to get the Deadpool character done right, and he nailed it with this movie. It is such an awesome movie that I've seen it so many times that, you know, my mind is a little fuzzy at the moment, but seen it so many times that, like, even when I know what's coming, it still gets me, you know? And just all the, like, little inside jokes that they throw in there, like, you know, the don't make the super suit green or animated, and the opening montage for the credits playing, you know, the just call me Angel and the morning angel. Like, just everything paused in slow motion, and his wallet with a picture of Ryan Reynolds' Sexiest Man Alive People magazine cover, a Green Lantern trading card, a little figurine of his version of the version of Deadpool from X-Men Origins Wolverine. And at the end of the movie, that he has a picture of Hugh Jackman's face stapled onto his own face, and excuse me, and then the post-credit scene, literally, you know, all what it's done by like Ferris Bueller with the hallway and the vest and all that, or not the vest, the robe. You know, I'm talking about, what do you expect? You know, Samuel Jackson coming in with an eye patch, you know, and all this stuff. And because, you know, that's one thing. Deadpool, he's known for breaking the fourth wall, so I enjoy that kind of shit. You know, and I know Birds of Prey was really trying to cash in on that, and for a lot of people, it didn't work. For me, it worked. And like I said, I hope MCU will stop being stupid and give us Deadpool 3, rated R, as it's intended to be. And then they can do whatever the fuck they want with Deadpool as a character. They can have him show up in the other MCU films. And if they want to treat him as a PG-13 character in those movies, then go ahead. But when it's his own movies, it has to be rated R. And also, if you haven't noticed by now, I'm wearing a Deadpool t-shirt in this video. It says, you know, I'm sorry that I offend you. And yeah, I have three Deadpool shirts, and this one's my favorite, because it's just, yeah. And moving on to number three on my list, we have X-Men 2, X-Men United. And this is one of the ones that I wish I could have seen in theaters, because this one, for a long time, this one was my favorite X-Men movie. Is because we got this one was where we got to see the teasing of the Phoenix story, little by little, you know, building off of the ending of the first X-Men movie, where Jean trying to save Rogue from the machine that I did not mention because a lot of that shit just blanked out on my head. That she had that moment where she just like, had a look on her face like, what the fuck just happened kind of thing. And in this one, yeah, they tease the Phoenix powers several times throughout, and I love that so much. And we also get to have what's his name as Pyro, which was really cool. And also we got Lady Deathstrike in this, where she has an awesome fight with Wolverine at the at Stryker's lab, which was really, really cool. And I'm surprised with that fight, they didn't really hold back when it came to the blood and the yeah, it was PG-13 gore, but it was still a pretty hard PG-13 gore, and there was a lot of bloodshed in that, and it was really cool, and I love that. And this is where we also got to be trying to shit. Where's my mind is so fucked up right now. I'm trying to think of what was I gonna say. Goddamn, what was I gonna say? What was I gonna say? And Mystique gets more lines in this movie because in the first one she didn't have any. This one she actually gets to talk, and they had a weird like vibrating voice for her when she's in her Mystique form. And on the TV screen, they showed Hank McCoy, which, you know, the continuity time and the timeline for these X-Men movies are so fucked up. You know, there's no consistency with them at all. You know, I mean, like, with the First Class, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, and Dark Phoenix, skipping ahead 10 years for each one, and all of them, and nobody has aged in any at all, is ridiculous. I mean, going from First Class to Days of Future Past, that's more believable that they would still look that way after 10 years, but after 40 years, well, 30 years from 60 whatever to 1990 whatever, there's no way they're gonna look like that. Yeah, and yeah, I get it. The mutant gene, they age slower, but come on, after 30 years, show some aging. But anyways, in this one is when they go a little more into Wolverine's origin. Which, again, is completely different from how it was in the Origins movie. But again, it's the continuity with the X-Men movies is so fucked. It's like, yeah, you have to look at them as being their own individual things, because each film essentially contradicts each other. You know? But yeah, this is where we do get Jean Grey, that she sacrifices herself to save the X-Men at the end of the movie after Magneto tried to fuck things up with Stryker's son that was trying to manipulate Xavier to killing all the mutants through a homemade version of Cerebro. And then Magneto manipulates him into getting Charles to kill all the humans. But then they finally snap him out of that. And then we get the moment at the end of the movie where you see the Phoenix flying across the water, again teasing the Phoenix story that we were supposed to get in the third movie, which we did not get. So, yeah. And then coming up to number two on my list, speaking of that film, Days of Future Past, which for a lot of people, and it's hard to argue, is the best X-Men movie of the X-Men movies. And it was such a perfect way to end the X-Men films up to that point, to me and to quite a few people I've spoken to about it, because it was just the perfect bridge between the original trilogy and then in First Class, and because we got to see James McAvoy with Patrick Stewart, Michael Fassbender with Ian McKellen, and they brought back Ellen Page to play Kitty Pryde in this movie. They had I can't remember this guy's name, but he played Bishop in this film as well. We had Halle Berry returning as Storm, and what's his name? Ashmore. That's his fucking name. Ashmore. Jesus. As Iceman. God, I don't know how that slipped my mind. Where they have to travel back in time, in a way that's much more believable than an Endgame. Sorry to upset anyone who loves Endgame so much. I love it too, but the time travel, it's a little fucked. But yeah, through Kitty Pryde, she helps, because she developed the power to help, you know, travel back and forth through different time loops. So Logan volunteers to travel back to the 70s to stop the assassination of. Fuck, what's his name? He's played by Peter Dinklage, who's a phenomenal actor. Absolutely love him. Shit, I can't remember his name. Trask. Yeah, as Trask. And he, because Mystique kills him, and that launches a whole war on mutants. And we get to see the Sentinels in this one, which was really cool, because I've always loved the Sentinels stories and the whole concept of the Sentinels in the X-Men lore. And this is Yeah, when he travels back, he goes to the X-Men mansion, where we see Beast and Charles Xavier, but you know, Beast had developed a serum that suppresses his Beast form, so he looks human, and then also a thing that, for Charles, that suppresses his mutant powers, so that he's able to walk. And we also, this is the film where we are introduced to Evan Peters as Quicksilver, where we get one of the best sequences in all of comic book movies, the slow motion scene when he's running through that kitchen at the Pentagon, which is just so cool. And I think it's everybody's favorite scene in this movie, probably of the entire X-Men franchise. And hey, I can't argue, because it is a great one. But my personal favorite moment of the entire film is where James McAvoy's Charles Xavier, in reading Wolverine's mind, finds himself in the present day part with Patrick Stewart, Charles Xavier, and they have that one-on-one conversation. To me, like, it is the best scene of the whole movie. Because it's just, I don't really know how to describe it. You have to watch the movie, especially the road cut. The road cut where they have the added scenes of Rogue that were not in the theatrical version. And just watch the whole movie and get to that part to understand what I mean when I say that is such a powerful scene. And also, yeah, with the road cut, and the whole thing with Rogue is that these newer versions of the Sentinels that are, you know, they're able to adapt people's, the mutants' powers, that Iceman and Magneto, they break in there to rescue her, because she's connected to Cerebro at the X-Men mansion, and that is how they're able to track down the mutants and essentially terminate them. So they go to rescue her after, well, that Wolverine has like a weird like fit where he just flips out and the claws come out and slashes Kitty Pryde, and she's bleeding out. She needs, you know, she can't continue to go. So then they rescue Rogue. Rogue pops in and swaps places with her, and Wolverine is able to continue for the rest of his mission to save humanity and the mutants by preventing the assassination attempt on Trask. And that whole sequence is really cool too, because it goes back and forth between the 1970s at the X-Mansion and the present day part of at the X-Mansion. And then at the end of this movie, they have the post credit scene that leads into Apocalypse, which you already heard what I said at the beginning of this. That was the perfect way to have ended the X-Men movies. Because the final part of the movie, when Logan wakes up and he realizes that he was successful in his mission, and he's walking around the mansion just like, you know, so like, oh my god, I really did it. And we see Kelsey Grammer back as Beast, which is really cool. And he gets to Charles' office and you see Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, who was just, gosh, so fucking beautiful. And I remember when I watched it the very first time, because I was watching it, I think, on HBO years when it finally premiered on there, and I was starting to get a little teary-eyed, like, because I didn't expect them to be there. And then they show James Marsden as Cyclops, and that's when I started to cry, because you know, I saw them both die in The Last Stand, and also because Cyclops was always my favorite X-Men character. And just, yeah, I was just like, fucking hell, this was a great movie. Especially with the road cut. It was a great ending to the X-Men story. But the best movie of the entire X-Men franchise from the year 2000 to now is my number one movie, Logan. That is a movie that I did get to see in theaters opening day, and was fucking blown away by how fucking amazing that Hugh Jackman gave his performance and Patrick Stewart giving their performance. That I think this is one, because this is one of the few comic book movies that actually brought me to tears more than once. Because the first time that I was brought to tears was, and again, spoilers, you should know by now, spoilers for everything that I talk about on these videos. But when X-24, the upgraded version of Wolverine that they were making at Alkali Lake, and was it at Alkali Lake or no? I can't remember. It was the lab that they created Lara X-23. That it was basically like an upgraded version of Wolverine. And he comes in and kills Charles, and I cried for that. And then of course the ending of the movie when Logan himself dies. That's when I was a blubbering mess, and every time I watched it since then, I'm a blubbering mess for that too, because it's just, you know, to me, like, I've always had the belief that if a movie can move you to tears, then that is a great story. And this story was just so freaking amazing, and just because the whole from the moment the movie starts, you know, you can see that Logan is not what he used to be. I could say he was a shell of his former self, but he really wasn't a shell of his former self. It was just because the adamantium was slowly killing him on the inside. They didn't fully explain how or why, but just that's the story. And just we are introduced to X-23, Lara, played by the wonderful Daphne Keene. She was perfect in this role, and she gave the best possible performance anyone could have given. Fun fact, the role almost went to Millie Bobby Brown, who we all know best as Eleven from Stranger Things. So imagine how the movie would have been if she stuck around for X-23. It's just funny, because, you know, just imagining the character Wolverine played by the original actor, which whose name I can't remember, and then imagine X-23 played by Millie Bobby Brown. Would have been a completely different situation. But yes, the whole story is that he is tasked with taking her to meet with the other children that were being bred in that mutant lab, because they want to, they're trying to escape to a mutant sanctuary up north, because they apparently had read some X-Men comic books where they believed that there was this safe haven for them. And yeah, so he travels across the country on the way to North Dakota, because that was where they were supposed to go in order to get to cross the border to Canada, where they would be safe and get all kinds of fucked up shit, you know, with the mutant kids killing all the soldiers in awesome and fucked up ways, and just, I don't know. This is another, like, I can't really say much about this movie to address this. This is the kind of movie you just have to experience it for yourselves. And if you get the Blu-ray and it has the noir version, it's literally the exact same movie but presented in black and white, and it just makes it feel different. It, you know, I don't know. Not sure which version of it that I prefer. Either way, it's a phenomenal movie. You know, you can't go wrong with it. And I guess that's where I'm going to cap it off, right here, at the end of this edition of Worst to Best from the Minotite Podcast. So I hope you all enjoyed listening to me ramble on for the last hour and almost 10 minutes now. And if you were bored off your asses, I sincerely apologize, because, I don't know, I guess if I had seen these, all of them again more recently, I probably would have done a much better job at this, but I have never pretended to be a professional at this. I am not a pro. I'm like one step above amateur, but I'm still a rookie at this shit. I'm not perfect. I'm not a professional. I don't pretend to be, but at the same time, I feel like that's the charm of my show. But yeah, I hope you, if you did enjoy it, thank you all very much for checking me out. I hope you subscribe if you're not already, and subscribe to right there, hit the notification bell so you catch up on everything that I have on here. Give me a like if you haven't already, and if you want to hear the audio only version of this so you don't have to look at my ugly mug for over an hour, You can check it out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, and Anchor. All the direct links to those will be in the description. Check me out on my social media, Twitter, Vero, Instagram, Facebook, all of those. The links are down there as well. You can DM me anytime you want on any of those. My inbox is always open. And if you want to support the Minutize Podcast, you can do so by joining my Patreon for $1 a month. I currently don't have any patrons on there, but that's fine. I didn't expect anybody to join ever. I barely expected anyone to buy anything from my store, which that link will be in the description as well. And honestly, I didn't expect a lot of people to even subscribe to this channel. But, I've got a decent amount of subscribers. I thank all of you who do subscribe. And if you want to check out my other content that I have on here, you can check my previous versions of, or previous editions, rather, of Worst to Best, where I talk about Star Wars, Superman, Halloween, Batman, Spider-Man. You can check out my retro film reviews that I've done for the Addams Family, No Holds Barred, Masters of the Universe, Vengeance Baron Munchausen, the original Lion King, my other movie reviews that I've had plenty of them since 2018, classic wrestling pay-per-views. The one I was supposed to have done, the Bash at the Beach 1996, last week on the 7th, and honestly, I just completely forgot that I even had that was supposed to be on last week, but I will have it sometime this week. I don't know exactly when, but I promise that I will have it. And regular podcast episodes as well. Although I will give you the advice, you can skip the earlier episodes because they're not so great. You can start with maybe like episode 8 or 9, where I get a little better at it. Because that first one especially is just so rough. It's so bad. But yeah, and if you all like what I have on here, like I said, give me a like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and those of you who already do subscribe, thank you all so very much. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I hope you all have a wonderful day. We'll have an even better week and a wonderful weekend as well. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your loved ones. Stay healthy. And this has been Worst to Best from the Minutize Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye.